Hello and welcome to the Brutal Iron Gym Podcast, where our goal is to cut through the BS and deliver the brutal truth about topics related to health and happiness. Today's podcast number 1089, holy cats. Our topic is Q&A and the title is Training Contrasting Muscles, Why and How. We're going to be covering a little bit of this detail because we had a listener send in a question. I love that. That's the entire point of what this podcast is for, is if you have questions, send them to us. We answer them. That way it can help you live healthier and happier life. So I've been very blessed to have physical fitness be a way in which I've improved my mental, emotional health and just my overall quality of life. And I want to be able to give back. So I've been a personal trainer for 19 years. I've trained over 2,500 people. I taught the university level for 7.5 years. I have a bunch of certifications, master's in human nutrition, health and phys ed teaching certification, ACSM personal training certification, NASM corrective exercise specialist. I've worked with a lot of organizations, a lot of groups outside of those things as well. And I've just learned a lot. So I'm relatively young, I'm only 37, but I've been doing this every day of my life since I was 15 years old. So it's been over 20 years. And this is no joke. My wife, Meredith, will laugh, or we've commented sometimes where I'll be away from my computer, or I'll be, you know, like cooking food, and then she'll go like, well, what are you listening to? And I'll be listening to either a self-help book on try to learn how to be a better self, a business development book, or training or nutrition. Those are the only things I listen to. If I'm watching a video while I'm eating, I'm watching a training video or a nutrition video, and she's laughing. She's asked, like, when we first ever met, like, oh my gosh, don't you ever get bored of this? Like, you do that all day. And I was like, no, I love this. This is amazing. So this has thankfully been something that I have absolutely loved my entire life. And I've gotten to help a lot of people, been very blessed. So I wanted to use the podcast as a way to share what I knew. And it was just an awesome opportunity to reach more people and connect to more people. And I sincerely appreciate everybody who's listening. Makes me feel awesome. So I just appreciate it very, very much. And thank you very much. So this listener sent in a question, and it was about training contrasting muscles. What that means is you're training muscles that kind of work against each other. So you have your bicep and your tricep. Like your bicep, you know, flexes your arm, your tricep extends your arm. So those would be contrasting muscles. Should you train those together? Commonly what people do is they kind of split body parts apart from each other based on location of the body or function, where, for example, they'll put all their push muscles together, chest, shoulders, and triceps. And this person's asking, do you think I should split that up and break away from that and do more of a contrasting style? Now, there have been tons of people who've used contrasting styles for training and been very successful. Arnold Schwarzenegger is one of them, and there's a bunch of other ones. But contrasting style training is more common in, it's more blatantly common in bodybuilding. But people do this in powerlifting more than they recognize it, because in a lot of bench press programs, they'll include a lot of back work as well. So you're doing the bench press to push muscles, but then they'll have like seal rows or some other type of like back work, and that's technically the contrasting movement from a push. So a lot of people do more contrast work than they think they do, but they don't know that because it's not called that. So I wanted to read through, and CrossFit, by the way, you do, good Lord, you do every movement under the sun in one workout, so you sure as hell do contrasting stuff for sure. Strongman, absolutely. A strongman training is all-around training for sure. So there's really going to be a lot of people that do contrasting style training without recognizing it. So what I wanted to do was read through the person's email, kind of answer different parts of it, and we'll learn along the way. So we're going to learn the pros and cons, kind of we'll talk about the good stuff of contrasting muscle training, and then I'm going to give a sample split that I have a couple of clients doing right now. Now, every client gets their own program. Like, everybody gets whatever's best for them, but there's going to be universal themes. So, for example, contrasting style training for bodybuilding is a great way for somebody to add mass quickly. So if I have somebody who's doing aesthetic goals. They want to compete, for example, or they just want to get bigger. We will do a lot of contrasting style training, and I'll do a lot of big, heavy compound movements. Actually, there's a great example. I have a guy right now out in California, and he wanted to get into more of aesthetic training after a stint of athlete style training. And he asked why I didn't do a lot of bicep and tricep isolations in his new program. He's like, you know, I want to build my arms. And I explained to him, and I'll explain in greater detail here today too, is your arm muscles are involved in your chest presses, overhead presses, and then all of your back rows and pull-ups and pull-downs. So my biceps are involved in pretty much every back exercise, exception of like straight arm pull-downs and, you know, dumbbell pullovers. But for the most part, back exercises will involve your bicep. For the most part, any kind of press, chest press, overhead press, will involve your tricep. So for him to grow faster, we want the heaviest weight loads he can get. Rather than isolating the triceps, for example, and having him do 12-pound dumbbells for tricep extensions, I'd rather have him pressing 40, 50, 60-pound dumbbells and getting that greater weight load onto the tricep musculature. That'll create greater damage, greater overall volume, and he'll actually grow faster. So there's a lot of cases in which we would use a concept, such as contrasting style, for multiple people, but how we implement that will be very different. And then depending on the equipment they have available. So that client, for example, works out in their home gym. They have like a tricep, like a cable pull down for lat pull downs. They have a squat rack, you know, barbell, adjustable bench and plates, but that's about it. Some adjustable dumbbells, but they don't have fancy machines, nothing else. So we write the program specifically for them and what their equipment is and all that stuff. So I'm getting sidetracked, but the reason why I wanted to explain that was the format that I'll give in today's podcast on how to train contrasting body parts isn't the only one. There's infinite options. It just depends on who I'm talking to and what their goals are, and then what equipment they have and what their schedule is, and all that good stuff. Okay, enough of me yapping. I'm so sorry. I'm just yapping quite a bit. They start their email with, "I have always trained push muscles together and pull muscles together. I like to train them as one and rest them as one. I'm just wondering if I'm missing out on potential gains." And what they mean by kind of train them as one and rest them as one is they would train all the push muscles together, chest, shoulders, triceps, and then they would allow those muscles to all rest together at the same time. And while they're resting, then they would train their pull muscles, back and biceps, for example. Sometimes people throw in rear delts, rear deltoids, which is your shoulders, fancy word for the shoulders. So, but they'll do all their push muscles once and rest them at once. They'll do all their pull muscles together and let them all rest at the same time together. Now, they say, let's say I work biceps and triceps together. Wouldn't I get an overall better arm pump? Would this lead to greater hypertrophy? And it's a method for arm growth, for sure, is to do arms, biceps, and triceps together. But it's not proven to be a superior method than training them separately. So it kind of depends on, are you a person who grows from the pump of lifting, or do you have to have heavy lifts? So for example, my upper body grew relatively well. Like when I first started lifting weights, I was 165 pounds and like chubby fat, like skinny fat, no muscle, but I had fat on me. I'm now 280 pounds and you can see my abs. So I've gained a crap ton of muscle, over 100 pounds of muscle, and I've gotten a lot stronger. My upper body grew relatively well till I was in the low 200s, but it didn't grow much from there from pump work. I had to lift heavier. The heavier and heavier, the stronger I focused on getting, my upper body started growing bigger and bigger and bigger. But my legs were the opposite. When I focus in on like powerlifting style stuff and strength style training, my legs actually reduce in size. When I go back to lighter weights and I do higher volume, my legs actually expand, they get bigger. So it's interesting for me that I found an upper body, lower body difference. Now, there's also individual differences between like different muscles. So for example, my traps grow really well from heavy deadlifts, but my lats actually grow better from high volume pull-ups and pull-downs. So it's a lot of fun to kind of see how that all interplays. But some people grow better or best from pump style training. Some people grow best from focusing more so on strength-based heavy stuff, and some people are right down the middle. So if you're a person who grows well from pump style work, then picking a technique, any technique that includes, improves pump effect will potentially work better for you. And that could be doing contrast training, training biceps and triceps together. You could even do blood flow restriction training. That's actually something that's really neat and weird, but it works really well for pump effect. It does trash for strength, but great for pump. Now, there's variants to that. So is that a potential way to get greater growth in your arms? Yes. But is it a superior method? No. You can still train biceps by themselves, train them very heavy, get their own pump, and they'll grow. A day or two later, you can train triceps by themselves, train them very heavy, get a pump, and they'll grow. So it's not necessarily that you're missing out on growth if you don't do contrast training, but it is something that if you've never tried, you might as well try it, because it's going to be a nice kind of change of stimulus for the body and could elicit a new response from the body. So it's an option. Maybe not superior. We don't know yet. You have to try it for yourself, but it's an option for sure. He continues, if I wanted to try this for a training cycle, would you suggest training larger muscles like chest and back earlier in the week, then lower body quads and hams, then back to smaller muscle groups of the upper body to give the secondary muscle groups a little rest before you train them again? Yes and no in this, and again, it depends on the individual. So what I want to do is answer this in a general way and then talk about how you'd make modifications. So if we're training contrast style, you're going to be training the upper body kind of together, push and pull. You're going to be training the lower body together, push and pull. And then you're like, okay, well, if I come back to the upper body, you know, later in the week, how do I organize that? In general, it's accepted that muscles can recover from training every 2 to 4 days. Kind of depends on the size of the muscle, depends on the intensity of the training, how strong you are, you know, how much muscle damage and system stress you're able to create within your training. The stronger you are, the bigger, the heavier things you can lift, the more stress you create, and undesirably more stress into connective tissues and joints. So you have to have longer rests than somebody who's newer to lifting or weaker in lifting. They might be able to train more frequently. So I have some people, they can train their whole body every single day, 5 days a week, because they're brand freaking new to it and they're still learning how to move themselves. I have other clients that if I made them train their whole body 5 days in a row, they'd die. So we're not going to do that. But in general, if you're training for hypertrophy, like muscle growth, it's recommended that you train your body parts twice a week. Some of them you can sneak in 3 times a week. Some of them, if they're a really dominant body part and you don't need them much, you can maybe get away with training them only once a week. There have been people that we all would hate that they're like, oh my God, my legs just grow so big. I guess I shouldn't train my legs. And they only have to train their legs like once every other week. They're assholes. We all hate them. So then there's people who have, you know, real big arms and they might not need to train their arms that often. So there are some variances depending on the person. But in general, you should train every body part twice a week if you want it to grow. That way it'll maximize the growth. If muscles heal every 2 to 4 days, but you only train them every 7 days, that means you're missing out on some potential growth. The muscles are just kind of sitting around waiting to be trained. So don't do that. So one of the ways in which we can look at this is to split our workouts up. If you're going to train 4 days a week, I'm going to give you an example for that, because it's pretty common that people will get 4 days a week. One workout can be upper body pull and push. Now, why did I just say pull and push, even though everyone under the sun typically says push and pull? Well, pull and push because most people need to emphasize back movements more than they need to emphasize their pushing movements. Most people are weaker in pulling muscles and pulling mechanics than they are in pushing muscles and pushing mechanics. So at the beginning of the week, when you tend to have some decent energy, you know, maybe you had a little bit of recovery over the weekend, a little extra sleep, blah, 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 we want to start at the beginning of the week with what we consider to be most important. So I would do upper body pull push. So if I was going to do a workout where I'm doing contrasting exercises, there are infinite ways to set this up. You can just do all of your pull exercises. So maybe you do a row, a pull up, pull down, and maybe a shrug. And then you go into a chest fly, chest press, overhead press. I don't know, I'm just making up stuff. So you do 3 pull movements, you do 3 push movements. You can do it in that way in a workout. Or you can do a pull movement, by itself, then a push movement by itself, then back to a pull movement by itself, then a push movement by itself. Or you can do supersets where you do a pull and a push together, take a break, pull and a push together, take a break. So there's a lot of ways to set this up. But in general, you would want to train pull and push together, and you want to emphasize or put the pull movements in the most energetic or best spot of the workout. So either at the beginning of the workout, or if you're doing supersets, make the pull movements the first exercise of the supersets. So we want to have an emphasis on the pull on the first upper body day. Now for lower body, we can actually still kind of think of push and pull, but it's going to be more so looking at movements that are knee extension dominant versus hip extension dominant. What I mean by this is movements that fail because you're failing to extend your leg, or movements that fail because you're failing to be able to extend at your hips. So let's think of some extremes. If I'm doing a dumbbell step up or a barbell step up, whatever the hell, step up, I'm going to have trouble trying to go up as I extend my leg. So a step up is a leg extension, whereas if I was looking at an RDL or a stiff leg deadlift, that's going to be a hip extension. You're going to fail because you can't extend your hips. So you can split the lower body up into knee extension versus hip extension. That will secondarily kind of start to separate things, quads versus hamstrings, but that's not always true. And if you try to do a quad-only movement other than like a leg extension, you're going to have some type of hamstring or glute work involved. So if I do a low, narrow stance on a leg press, that is quad dominant, but I'm still going to be using my hamstrings and glutes. If I try to do a, you know, say a conventional deadlift or sumo deadlift to work my hamstrings, I'm still going to be using some of my quads. So there's a lot of blend over when you look at lower body, but one of the ways that I like to separate it is knee extension and hip extension. And the reason why is most people are very weak at knee extension movements, but not as weak at hip extension. So if you don't pay attention to separating them in this way, you'll become hip extension dominant. That means that your aesthetics will not be best because you're going to be very thick around the waist. You're not going to have big, like, ballooned out, very nicely developed thighs. You're not going to have enough muscle down by your knee, so you're not going to like the way your knees look. It doesn't look like the muscles from your thigh, like, blow up right from your knee. You have a very skinny-looking knee, very underdeveloped knee, and you're going to have a weak knee. It's going to create a lot of lower back stress. You're going to end up using a lot of lower back and abs when you're doing things like squats and deadlifts. That's going to thicken your core, and you're going to wonder why you don't have a nice X frame, but you have a thick midsection. It's because you have weak-ass knees. You need to strengthen your knees, and that's going to bring down the size of your midsection. Sounds crazy, but I promise it's true. So that's why I like to separate training in the lower body from like knee extension versus hip extension. And since knee extension is weaker, we tend to put that first and emphasize it first. So the first two workouts are upper body pull, push, emphasize pull. Then the lower body workout push, pull, where you're kind of emphasizing knee extension versus hip extension. Okay. Now, workout three, we go back to upper body, but we do push-pull. We now flip the order. And we go back in workout number four to lower body, and we do pull-push. We flip the order. So workouts one and two, we just flip the order for three and four. Now, I tend to encourage people to stay with bigger movements when they do this style of training, contrast training. Stay with, like, chest presses and back rows. Don't do a lot of tricep and bicep isolation work, or a lot of mid-delt, like mid-shoulder isolation work. And this is a general, very general recommendation. And the reason why is we went back to that client from California is, if we're looking for hypertrophy, we have to damage muscle tissue. We have to beat the crap out of muscle tissue so that way our body takes our excess food and protein and builds in more material than what was there before. So if I go in and I break the structure down, my body's going to put muscle back into that structure and actually thicken it up even more to try to prevent it to be broken down again. So our goal is to break muscle tissue down without breaking our joints and all the other stuff. But we want to damage muscle tissue. What's going to do that for us is heavier weight loads and higher volumes. So if I'm doing, I had a person at the gym, I don't train every single person at Brutal Iron Gym, we have an open gym membership, but there was a young girl one time doing 8-pound skull crushers, and I couldn't help it, I normally don't get involved, But I asked her, I said, are you doing those to build your arms? And she looked, she goes, yeah. And I said, oh, come here. So I went and showed her some other things to do and got her away from doing 8-pound skull crushers because I just felt bad. She was wasting her time. 8 pounds is not going to tear at the tissues of your triceps. Not at all. So she was going to be doing a lot of movements, but none of that was going to translate to growth. You have to lift heavy. Now, heavy relative to the person. So, for example, my dad and I made what I believe to be the only world's freestanding reverse band capable bench press. And I have a lot of my female clients do reverse band bench pressing. Because if they're practicing technique, and say the best they can practice technique with for sets of like 3 to 5, might only be 120 pounds in a bench press. 120 pounds divided by all the muscles of your upper body is not enough to tear up the tissues. You're really only getting technique work, you're not getting physical development. Whereas if you do reverse band benching, you can overload the range of the motion other than just off the chest. So a typical bench press, the heaviest you can possibly go is what you can do in the last 1 inch of the press down by your chest. So not the last inch of lockout, but the inch of, like, as your bar gets closer to your chest, you get weaker, weaker, weaker. As you're trying to push the bar off your chest, you're weakest, but then you get stronger to lockout. Well, if we can do reverse banding, it can make the movement miserably heavy the entire time, not just in this one little 1 inch part of the range of motion. So reverse band benching helps them increase the weight load stress into their muscles, and they can develop their bench press faster. Now, I've helped women, a ton of women, set state records and big records in powerlifting in bench press specifically. So I know this works because everything sped up faster with my clients' results when I started using reverse band benching. So absolutely works. Now, we can use that same concept with muscle development in the sense that we want to maximally load the tissue to create maximal muscle damage. So if you're doing a lot of isolation work and it's all piddly lightweight and you're thinking like, I'm building my mind-muscle connection, there's some benefit to that in the sense of like if you're brand new to lifting and you have to learn how to flex your tricep. But once you know what that feels like, stop doing the piddly things and get some weight on there. Damage up those muscles. So really, triceps, biceps, middle delts, calves, abs, those things just kind of fit in where they can. So a typical push-pull workout for the upper body, I'm going to definitely have some type of chest press, definitely some type of chest fly, because the chest is a big muscle. So we want to make sure that we have some type of isolation into that. Now, yes, did I just argue against isolations? You bet I did. But I'm going to tell you to do some chest flies because chest is a dominant aesthetic muscle, especially for men. So men, you do want to be emphasized in the chest by doing some flies. What that extra benefit is, if you do chest flies before you do presses, it gets your chest further damaged, but it also requires more work out of the triceps. So you actually end up getting more tricep damage out of the chest press as well. So it benefits both muscles. So there's a concept called pre-exhaust, and priming. And you can use those techniques to actually get more muscle development out of your larger movements. So that's an example of something I would do, is I would have like a chest press, chest fly, then probably some kind of overhead press. So those would be, if I had to pick three things, those would be the three I'd pick. Now, if I have extra time, can I add in, like, tricep press downs? Sure. But should I pick tricep press downs over overhead presses? No. Should I pick tricep press downs over chest presses? No. So, really, it's just how much time you have in the gym, how much energy you have, how much food you have, and can you fit in those small parts? The reason why, also, it's not that important to try to fit them in is they're already involved. Every time I do a heavy back row, every time I do a heavy pull-up or pull-down, I'm already using my biceps. So I don't need more isolation of my biceps. The biceps are already involved. Every time I'm doing a chest press, every time I'm doing an overhead press, I'm using my triceps. So I don't need more tricep isolation. Now, if I have predominantly well-developed back and chest, and I feel like my arms are not proportional, they're disproportional to the middle of my body, then hell yes, I want to isolate the shit out of my arms. But that's once your chest and back are fully developed and the arms might seem lagging, then you do a lot of isolation work. I wouldn't do it until my chest and back was where I wanted them to be. And then I would start doing isolation on small parts. Now, calves and abs, I'd recommend actually doing those to start your lower body workouts. They're a great way to get blood flowing, get some adrenaline going, get some sweat going, do some calves and abs, and then beat the crap out of your legs and then be done for the day. So calves and abs at the beginning of your lower body workouts, triceps, biceps, middle delts, really only every once in a while, maybe once a week or once every 2 weeks, have fun throwing them in there. But for the most part, stay with bigger, more dominant movements so that way you get all of the muscles developed. Every time you're doing a tricep exercise, you're only growing the tricep. Every time you're doing a chest press, you're growing your chest, your front shoulders, and tricep. So why not get more bang for your buck, right? So that's an example of how I would set up my weekly split. Is upper body, lower body, upper body, lower body. I would do pull emphasis first on upper body, then push movements. On my lower body, I would do knee extension emphasis before my hip extensions on the beginning of the work, beginning of the week. Okay? Now, he continues, if I did this, would it be a good idea to rotate muscle groups? For example, train back first, followed by chest for week one, and then week two, train chest first, and so on. Yep, that's what we just said, was in the organization of things you want to rotate through. Put your weakest areas first, the strongest areas you can then catch later in the week. That way, it is true that each muscle group gets prioritized at some point in time, but you want to make sure that the prioritization is balanced, not a neutral balance, but balanced to you. Meaning, I don't want to follow a basic program that everyone else follows because I'm not built like everyone else. I want to make a program that's mine because I am built like me. So if my back is weaker than my, like less developed than my chest muscles, then yes, I want to train my back first. But let's say, for example, you did a lot of strongman stuff and you never really did bench presses ever. And you're now transitioning into like aesthetic work. You're like, you know what, dude, a strongman, man, I have a pretty nice back, but I never did any bench presses, so my chest kind of sucks. Well, then you're going to prioritize chest first. But that's a great example as to why you need a program different than like somebody else. So they might both might want to grow bigger. Both might want to use contrasting style training. Both might actually fall into this exact 4-day split, but your exercises will be different than somebody else's. So there's a lot of benefit to knowing how to personalize this stuff. So that way you're not wasting time or building an improper balance to your physique. Now, they finish up with, I'm experiencing a lot of pain and discomfort to the point where I'm losing sleep by tossing and turning to relieve pain in the middle of the night. This has a huge impact on my recovery abilities, also waking up tired each morning and dreading my work. I'm just trying to find a way to balance out my muscles and maybe relieve some of my issues. Yeah, so looking at contrast training is a good way to do that because you're looking at kind of balancing the pulls and stressors on your joints, and that can help kind of even out the stress that's on your joints. Now, common advice when somebody's telling me this, like that they're tossing and turning at night, they have muscle tightness, soreness, they're just kind of feeling beat up and feeling like crap. Number one, look at hydration. Now, this listener, I already know that they're not going to need some of this advice, but I'm going to give it to everybody. So number one, look at hydration. Drink a minimum of a gallon of water a day. Oh my God, a gallon of water. Yes, just drink a gallon of water a day. If you can't get to it right away, work your way up over the couple weeks, maybe a month, okay? And if you don't have any blood pressure issues, salt your foods, so that way your body retains more water. Some of the reasons why we feel chronically tight and bound down is because our muscles are dehydrated. And if we look at like spaghetti noodles, yes, I just somehow made a transition to spaghetti noodles. So if I cook pasta, and then I just let it sit out. As it dries on the counter, all the different noodles stick to each other, right? Well, how do you get them to unstick? You run them underwater. Ooh, see where I'm going here? Uh-huh. Yep, you just put that together. So if we hydrate our muscles can then glide and slide. They don't feel so stuck and bound down and tight. So if you're feeling tight, sore, you know, kind of not moving well, stiff, hydrate yourself. If you notice that as you hydrate yourself, you're peeing 17,000 times a day, then start salting your foods. And if you don't have any carbohydrates in your meals, go ahead and put carbohydrates back in. Carbohydrates are not the devil. They will not make you fat. Overeating makes you fat, so don't worry about that. If you want to learn more about carbohydrates and their kind of pros and cons, we have, let's see here, Podcast 474 is titled, Is Going Low Carb Necessary for Fat Loss? So that would be a cool one to check out. Podcast 474, you can Google this. Just Google Brutal Iron Gym Podcast 474, Is Going Low Carb Necessary for Fat Loss? That way you can learn that going low carb isn't necessary for fat loss. Spoiler alert. And then also Podcast 650 is titled Body Weight Effects from Carbohydrates and Sodium. You can learn more about how sodium interplays with, like when I said salt your foods, how that interplays with carbohydrates and overall hydration. So super awesome, really good resources there if you want to check those out. Second thing to look at is protein content. Get at least 0.6 grams of protein per pound of body weight. That would be a good kind of minimum to be at. So if you're not at that, you have to make sure you get there. And that way it'll help get you more recovery between your workouts. So for example, if I weighed 150 pounds, I would take my body weight and I would multiply that by 0.6. And that gives me 60% of my body weight, which is 90. So if I weighed 150 pounds, I should be eating a minimum of 90 grams of protein. Now, once you have that, if you're still stiff and sore, move up to 0.8. Get to 0.8 grams of protein per pound of body weight. Okay, so you take your body weight, you'd multiply that by 0.8, and that would give you 120 grams, for example, if you weighed 150 pounds. So body weight times 0.8. That would be, if I'm lifting weights four times a week, that's like 0.6 grams per pound of body weight is like the minimum just to be a normal human being. 0.8 is if I'm lifting weights on a regular basis, that would be my minimum. And then 1 gram per pound of body weight is kind of sufficient. It's what everybody would be good at. So eventually get your weight worked up to 1 gram per pound of body weight. So if I weighed 200 pounds and it's a relatively lean 200 pounds, I want to eat 200 grams of protein. Now, what happens if somebody says, well, you know, I weigh 250, but man, you know, I'm looking at this belly. Do I really need 250 grams of protein? Probably not. So we are considering more so lean muscle mass or lean body weight. So if I weighed 250, but I think, you know, if I was kind of less belly, little as jelly, and I was lean, I might be like maybe 210, 220, then eat 210 to 220 grams of protein. So guesstimate what you would say your ideal weight would be if you were a little bit leaner, and that would probably be a good place to go for. So hydration is the first thing to look at. Protein content is the second thing to look at. Then you got to stretch. And stretching doesn't take a lot. It's completely misunderstood, but stretching your whole body can take less than 10 minutes. If you want a routine, just shoot me an email at brutalirongym@gmail.com. I'll send you a full body routine that you can do in under 10 minutes. So you can stretch every single day. So that way you're kind of pulling open the muscles, getting the body up and running. You might find like, okay, I'm having a lot of shoulder pain because my lat is crazy tight. As I've loosened my lat, all of a sudden my shoulder feels great. I sleep better. So you want to do stretching. So hydration is number one, protein number two, stretching number three. You want to then do high blood flow training. And what this does is it flushes a lot of fluids in and out of the joints, and it helps to kind of even out tissue tightnesses. You don't have to do anything special. Just all of the movements you already do, just do some high rep warm-ups. So for example, if I want to do chest presses, I'm going to do a set of 20 to 30 reps. So maybe I'll grab 20-pound dumbbells and I'll do 30 repetitions. Then I'll go to 25-pound dumbbells and do 20 repetitions. Then I want to do a set or two of 16 to 20 reps, a set or two of 12 to 16 reps, and then I go into my working sets. If I just do 2 to 3 high rep sets before my heavier stuff, that helps to heal up the joints, get a lot of blood flow through the joints, and it can help even joint stress. Okay. Last thing we look at, well, not next to last, the next last, is joint supplements. Are you taking any kind of supplements to help your joints? One of my favorite ones is animal product. It's called, let me clear that for a second. Universal Nutrition is a supplement company. They have a line of products titled Animal, because you're a beast, you're a hardcore bodybuilder, you're an animal. So I'm not recommending that you take an animal product in the sense that it's made for like horses and cows and stuff. But the Universal Nutrition Company's animal line, quote unquote, there's a supplement called Flex. So if you go to Amazon and you type Animal Flex Joint Supplement. I promise it won't show you something that's for horses and cows. It'll be a container that's written, it's a black container with red writing, and it's for bodybuilders. It's a pills, a package of pills you can take that's a joint supplement. By far one of the best ones I've ever had anybody take. My dad takes something called Orange Triad, which is like a multivitamin and joint supplement kind of built in together. So that's another one to check out. These are the things I would look at: hydration, protein, stretching, high blood flow, training, joint supplements, and then I would consider changing my programming to something like these contrasting styles. The change of training is going to have a positive effect, but it will not make up for these other things. So if you change your training style, but you're constantly dehydrated, the training isn't going to work. If you change your training style, but you're under your protein requirements, the training isn't going to work. If you change your training style, but you're going into the training uneven tightnesses everywhere, you haven't stretched, the training isn't going to work. And then again, the high blood flow training helps and the joint supplement helps. So before you change programming concepts, you want to look at all these other areas. Okay? Well, that was hopefully some interesting information, some helpful information. If anybody wants any help kind of putting together a program for themselves based on this contrasting style, shoot us an email, brutalirongym@gmail.com. I'll help you out. We can write you a conceptual-based program where we write the concepts and give you some exercise examples. You plug and play as you want, and you can use that for however long you want. I have people that have used their conceptual templates for over a year, so that's an option. And then we also have our kind of one-on-one client work that we do, where we have different pay structures. But you and I talk, you know, via email or communication on over the phone. You tell me your story, tell me what your struggles are. I write a nutrition program specifically for you, training program specifically for you. I help with accountability, motivation, all the good stuff. And it's super helpful. So if you want some one-on-one coaching to get you started for a month or two and really kind of feel comfortable knowing what you're doing is going to work, and then you can kind of run with it on your own. So a lot of options. Just check us out at our website at www.brutalirongym.com if you want to check those out, or shoot me an email and tell me what your story is. Tell me what your struggles are. I'm here to listen. I'm here to help. My email is brutalirongym@gmail.com. Okay. Well, hopefully this was helpful. Hopefully we had good information. If you like the podcast and you think the podcast in general is helpful, please share the podcast. The more we share it, the more people are listening, and we're going to help more people. So help me help more. So I appreciate you all very, very much. I truly do. And I want to help as many people that want the help, you know, that need the help. So the more we share the podcast, the more we can expose people to this as an option for them and give them the chance to have this help as well. So thank you for those who share the podcast. Also, thank you to the patrons of the podcast, people financially support the podcast. Podcast is well over $1,000 a year to do. So thank you sincerely for helping the financial burden of this. I really appreciate doing this, and it's only due to the financial help that we're able to do this like literally every day. So thank you so much. If you like this podcast, click like. It'll help the podcast be found better on searches. If you like our information we share, you can find more on social media, on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube under the name Brutal Iron Gym. If you have any questions, feedback, suggestions, if there's ever anything you need, I'm always here. My email is brutalirongym@gmail.com. As always, I hope this was helpful, and thank you for listening.